Hello, and welcome to another however long this happens to run, worth of me talking about Peanuts books. I'm Nat Gertler, the Og blogger, the guy with a room full of Peanuts books and a face that's ideal for podcasting. I was trying to decide what to do this week's podcast about, and I got this tweet last night from a podcast listener, Andrum, who will, like all not-me people on this episode, be performed by Allison.
I've never cared about podcasts until you started one. It is manageable to listen to. It's not overwhelmingly frequent or long, and it comes as a plain MP3 file on a plain website. My favorite episode so far was the one on book collecting.
And that tweet made me happy, both because I'm glad that my efforts are appreciated, and because it reminded me that there was something for the mailbag from that episode he liked. So I decided it's time for another mailbag episode. And that piece of mail, he reminded me, actually came from Og blogger relative JJ.
Dear Og blogger, I would submit that there may be at least a third reason to collect. Belief and/or fear that nobody else will probably appreciate or care for a particular item. It probably sounds a bit delusional, but especially on unusual items, someone who knows a subject well may find an item or category that is sufficiently esoteric that it might not be properly understood by others. Whether this applies to Peanuts, I have no idea.
There's definitely some validity to that, at least when it comes to my own collecting. I can justify both acquiring something and through purchasing it, keeping it out of the hands of others, because I know that I am likely to pay it the attention it deserves. Other people might be glad to have, say, a Braille Peanuts book as a curiosity item. But because I have them, I have chronicled their existence, I have done an interview with someone who was involved in making them, I have treated the object with a certain degree of respect. I'm sort of a believer that things should go where they are most useful, and sometimes, just sometimes, I like having my stuff, but sometimes I've been willing to part with things for those who would treat them better or get more out of them. It's a form of justice for objects, I guess. Delving back into the virtual mailbag, Og blog reader Dale over in London, in ye olde land of Eng, asks,
I'm wondering if you know anything about the Peanuts Every Sunday series from Fantagraphics. Is it just me, or does it seem to have stalled? I was sort of expecting the 1970s box set to be out by now, but they haven't even published a second 1970s book yet. Do you have any inside info to share? I really hope they haven't lost interest in the series. I'd dearly love to have the complete set to go along with the complete Peanuts set.
So he's talking about Peanuts Every Sunday, the huge and gloriously colored, often recolored, hardcovers collecting every Peanuts Sunday strip. Now, as you may have seen on the blog in a post that went up after I received this query, a new volume in the 1970s box set have been announced as coming out for this Christmas shopping season. As for why it feels like these books are coming slower now, well, they're not. But you're not the only person I've seen having this reaction, if you do. People who have acclimated themselves to the release schedule of the complete Peanuts keep viewing Peanuts Every Sunday as running late. Actually, it's running perfectly on time. While Complete Peanuts had a schedule of 2 new volumes per year, with a box set ready for Christmas time, the Peanuts Every Sunday schedule has always been 1 volume per year, also around Christmas time, because the big book of colored Peanuts, that's a great Christmas present, right? And that means that the 2-volume box sets only come out every other year, collecting the most recent 2 years, a whole decade worth of Sunday strips. It's a slow schedule, a 10-year process to reprint them all, but so far they're on schedule. Now, I got a question from Karen at one point, and I cannot find where it is, but she was asking whether Schultz provided original art for the strip reprint books. I think she was specifically referring to the Reinhardt and Company and Holt, Reinhardt and Winston books, or whether the cover art was just reusing strip panels, or was some new art by a third party. And I think we basically got the answer during my interview with Wally Exman a few episodes back. Schultz did indeed create new art for those covers, and not just for the front cover. He sometimes created new images for the back cover. Or in the case of More Peanuts, he did one giant wraparound image that went on both covers. It was Charlie Brown and Lucy pulling a couple of toys, a couple of pull toys, some wooden animals on wheels. Charlie Brown is pulling a duck. But the real gag of it is actually hidden on the back panel, because that's only where we see what's on the end of Lucy's string, which is a skunk. Quite humorous, quite fitting. Now, More Peanuts was the second Peanuts book released in the U.S., coming, unsurprisingly, after Peanuts. The first Peanuts book in the UK, at least as far as I've been able to find, was a daily sketch publication titled simply Peanuts, by reprinting not the American book Peanuts, but rather two-thirds of the book More Peanuts. And they reused the cover image, but didn't include the back cover. In fact, not only did they lose Lucy's skunk, they erased Charlie Brown's duck, so it appears to be just two kids walking along, one of them holding a short segment of string. They're also now being led by a certain black-and-white dog, who is not in the original image. Anyway, back from the digression, Schultz did front cover images, in some cases back cover images, and sometimes even frontispiece images. New drawings to go inside the book. In fact, one communication I had with Mr. X-Men years ago was he had some of those frontispiece drawings that Schultz had done and was looking to auction some of them off and get them into a home that would love them as much as he had. Now, other strip reprint books have used recycled pieces of art. You know, of course, Peanuts reprints keep coming out, and Sparky is unavailable to do new art for covers, unsurprisingly. But if you look at some of those recycled images, you can tell why Schultz doing original covers back when he did was probably a good idea. I'm looking now at a copy of Snoopy to the Rescue, a recent addition to the AMP Comics for Kids line. And its cover image of Snoopy with a fire hat is very obviously blown up from an existing scanned image. When a figure that was meant to be part of a small panel is now trying to fill a book cover, you can see it's not as sharp, that certain forms of ink blobbiness are visible, particularly in the drawn grass line that Snoopy is standing on. Whoever processed that cover added a second line of grass horizon, just using color, no outline, but its style and placement doesn't match well with the grass line that's there. There's a lot of work into trying to make this work as a cover image. Now, I've only been involved in creating one Peanuts book cover to date, for the cover of the Charlie Brown Christmas stocking collection. There was not quite the right piece of art inside, so I combined two pieces, one with Snoopy and his doghouse, one with Charlie Brown looking on, into a single image, so it appears that Charlie Brown is reacting to the doghouse, with Christmas stockings hung from it. Podcast fan Andy, who always wants to know what the next podcast is, asks, well, he asks a couple of things, and I suspect he'll be a little disappointed that this is the one I'm answering here, as I haven't had time to gather the answer to his other question. Anyway, he asks,
I have read that some comic historians say that Peanuts peaked in the 70s. They also say that the strip went downhill in the 80s and 90s. One says that when Schultz started doing grandfather jokes, that he had run out of material. What do you say to these comparisons?
Ah, searching for the golden age. There's a saying in the science fiction business that the golden age of science fiction is 12. What they mean by that is whatever you were reading at age 12 was what was blowing your mind, and anything that came before that was not imaginative enough, and what came after that is too derivative. So to a certain degree, the peak Peanuts is whatever is most like what you think the ideal Peanuts is, and that is shaped by one's Peanuts experience. So for me, the peak decade is probably about 1956 to 1965, when the characters had settled into their generally recognized form, but the emotions were still fresh and edgy. But then I grew up reading Fawcett Crest books collecting material from about that era. For someone who grew up on the 70s Peanuts, where the schlemiel aspect of Peppermint Patty was on the rise, that would be the purest. And I know people who only like Peanuts when Snoopy was actually a dog, i.e. the first few years. And there are bound to be people who grew up on 1980s Peanuts, for whom Spike was a key to the strip, rather than earlier readers who saw him as an interruption. And while I certainly understand those who feel that the 1980s and 1990s were downhill, I gotta say this. I think the last 5 years of the strip, really, especially the last 3 years, were a renaissance. That with Schultz having found a way to make his shaky line a sign of wistfulness, and with his wielding rerun in a newfound manner, there's some genius material there. But even bad Peanuts is a relative thing. The worst run of Peanuts is still better than the best run of most strips. All just my opinion, of course. And that's it for this episode of the Aug Blog Podcast. Stop by the blog itself at aug.com. That's A-A-U-G-H.com. If you need some doses of the Aug Blogger between episodes. And send in questions, send in comments, send in suggestions. And until next time, may your pen pal write with perfect legibility. May the mailman bring your shipment of 100 peacetime civilians.
And may all your griefs be good ones.